on behalf of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, we welcome you to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple for our Sunday festival. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has prayed, Ai nanda tanuja kinkaram patitam mam vishame bhavam budau kripaya tava pada pankaja sthita duli sadrisam vichintaya. This is the fourth of the prayers that are entitled Shikshastakam. Herein, Lord Chaitanya is praying not just to the Lord, but specifically to Nanda Tanuja, to the son of Nanda Maharaj. In 1966, when Srila Prabhupada established his society in the West, the devotees objected to the name International Society for Krishna Consciousness. They felt it was too foreign. It would be a barrier that may alienate people from coming forward to associate with devotees. They felt that the generic name of God Consciousness would be more accommodating and appealing. But Srila Prabhupada was very strong. We have come specifically to give people an awareness of who is God. And the ultimate conception of God is Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj. There are so many societies teaching sub-religious principles. But our society is specifically to reveal Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-attractive object of everyone's love. That Supreme Most Personality who all other conceptions of God are emanating from, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the previous three slokas of Shikshastakam, has glorified the potency of the holy name, the effect that the holy name has on one who chants sincerely and without offense, and how to chant without offense. One must be humble. One must feel oneself having no attraction. One must feel like as insignificant as a blade of grass, as tolerant as a tree, and without prestige, offer respect to others, and chant in that spirit, without aspiration for money, or sex, or prestige, fame, scholarship, or liberation. The only aspiration to be servant of the servant of the servant. And then he calls upon the Lord's mercy. Ai nanda tanuja kinkaram patitamam vishame bhavam budau kripaya tava pada pankaja sthita duli sadrisam vichintaya. The son of Nanda Maharaj, who is supremely playful, who attracts everyone's heart by his most beautiful pastimes, Even Brahma, the powerful creator of the secondary creator of this universe, he fell at the lotus feet of Gopal. At that time he was very young. He was still in charge of calves before he was even given the responsibility of taking care of cows. Lord Brahma placed the four crowns on his heads at the dust of the feet of the son of Nanda, considering himself insignificant. Lord Brahma told that in darkness the firefly is thinking that I am illuminating all directions with my light. But in the presence of the sun, the firefly realizes I am utterly insignificant. In other words, false pride can only remain in our heart to the extent we are in the darkness of ignorance. Ignorance means forgetful of our relationship with Krishna. Knowledge is to understand who I am. I am not this temporary, ever-changing body or mind, but I am spirit, aham brahmasmi. And the fuller understanding of spirit is that we are part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit, Krishna. Krishna Surya Sa Maya Hoya Andhakar. Where there is Krishna, who is like the sun, there is all light. Maya means darkness, ignorance, forgetfulness of Krishna in our relationship. But when the sun of Krishna rises in our heart, then all ignorance is dispelled. So we may be great scholars. We may know slokas. We may know philosophy. But if we are proud, we are in the darkness of ignorance. It is evidence. Pride cannot exist in the light of Krishna. Lord Brahma's scholarship is something extraordinary. From his four mouths come the four Vedas. He is the original guru of the universe. He lives for 311 trillion years and never loses his memory, never loses his physical prowess. Father of everyone, of all species, grandfather, great-grandfather. But yet he is saying to Krishna, I thought I was something great because I was in the darkness of ignorance. But like that firefly, now in your presence I realize that whatever power I have is yours. That is the son of Nanda Maharaj. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is praying for the mercy of the son of Nanda. You are most merciful, and I am most fallen. This is the proper approach to the Lord. And then he's praying for shelter. He's praying for the shelter of being a particle of dust at the lotus feet of the Lord. That's his ultimate aspiration. Not to be a king, not to be a conqueror, not to be rich and famous, not to be God, but to be a speck of dust at the lotus feet of the Lord. Our speck of dust is very tiny. And there's billions of specks of dust. He's not asking to be the one and only speck of dust. Just one out of billions and trillions of specks of dust. Let me just be amongst them. That is the mood of a devotee. That is the mood of the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna in the role of a devotee. Not only in a role of a devotee to teach us the proper method of devotional service, but he's also in the role of a devotee because he's aspiring for the sweetness of a devotee's love. Shri Radhaya Pranaya Mahima Kidriso Vanayaiva. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna who wants to taste the sweetness of the supreme most devotee, Sri Radha. There's that famous darshan of Krishna sucking on his toe, sitting on a banyan tree leaf, floating in the ocean of devastation. Very amazing. The ocean of devastation has conquered everything. And here is baby Krishna, just floating on a single little banyan tree leaf, sucking on his toe. Why is he doing like that? Srila Prabhupada explains, because he sees how so many devotees are trying to taste the sweetness of his lotus feet. And they're so joyful. They're so ecstatic tasting the sweetness of his lotus feet. He wants to see what they're tasting. So he takes the form of a little baby because babies quite naturally suck their toes just to experience what the devotees are experiencing. In the spiritual world, no one wants to be important. Everyone simply wants to be amongst those who Krishna loves. So yes, Lord Chaitanya is not saying, I want to be the speck of dust at your lotus feet. He's praying, I want to be a speck of dust. Recently we performed the Govardhan Parikrama. And how many specks of dust are even on our little feet? Countless. Scientists could not count how many pieces, specks of dust are even on one of your lotus feet. And Krishna's lotus feet can accommodate all living entities. So let me just be amongst those billions and trillions unlimited specks of dust at your lotus feet. Srila Prabhupada taught us, what does it mean to take the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord or his devotees? It means to serve. Anyone could grab dust. People fight to get dust. And it becomes more a wrestling tournament of false ego than it is trying to serve the others. It could become like that. But going and trying to grab dust from someone's feet has little value. The idea is the feet is the lowest part of a person's body. And we want to take the lowest position of going beneath their feet, where the dust is, and placing our identity there. To be the dust of the lotus feet of a person is to actually take the dust. And that means to take the role of servant. Servant of the servant of the servant. That is what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cherished to be the highest aspiration. Gopi Bhartur Patakamalayora Dasa 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 Anu Das. To be the Anu, very small, insignificant, amongst billions and trillions of unlimited others, servants of the servants of the servants. Not of just anybody, but of the Lord of the Gopis, Nanda Nandana Sri Krishna. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is praying for mercy. And what is the mercy he's praying for? To be a speck of dust, the feet of the Lord. Those who take shelter of the Lord become specks of dust at the feet of the Lord. Those who take shelter in the mood of service to Srila Prabhupada, through this analogy, can be likened to the specks of dust at the feet of Srila Prabhupada. And to take that dust means to serve the dust. This is described in Srimad Bhagavat. Then higher than serving the feet of the Lord is to serve the dust of the feet of the Lord. And what is the dust of feet of the Lord? The devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord. That is the highest service. So today, we have a very extraordinary benediction upon us. Those devotees who are the personal associates of Srila Prabhupada, who sacrifice so much of their lives to serve Prabhupada, and who Srila Prabhupada loved so dearly. Srila Prabhupada acknowledged these devotees' service with such grateful and gracious heart. They are the dust of Prabhupada's lotus feet. And to hear from them, it is the first process of devotional service. Saravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. We serve by hearing. That is fundamental to all other processes of devotional service. When we hear about the extraordinary qualities of Srila Prabhupada from those who were his personal servants, we receive Prabhupada directly. Directly in the most accommodating, munificent form. Actually, much of what we know as common knowledge through Prabhupada Lilamrita by His Holiness Satsvarupa Goswami Maharaj, by hearing from others, that information was revealed to the world by these devotees sitting here, much of it. We have heard beautiful stories from His Grace Shruti Kirti Prabhu for the last week. And last week in Sunday, also Hari Sori Prabhu was speaking. Yadubar Prabhu was speaking. These devotees had such intimate association with Prabhupada. Such confidential dialogues with Prabhupada. Many things Prabhupada only said one time to them. And now they are the common knowledge all over the world about the most, about some of the most wonderful, intimate divine traits of Srila Prabhupada's personality. Things that Srila Prabhupada spoke to Shruti Kirti Prabhu under a mosquito net while being massaged. How now in books and spoken about all over the world. Factually, we would have never heard these things if Prabhupada did not speak it to Shruti Kirti Prabhu, and Shruti Kirti Prabhu did not reveal it to the whole world. So yes, we are very fortunate. By serving, the Vaishnavas who have taken shelter of Srila Prabhupada, we are serving, in truth, the dust of the feet of Srila Prabhupada. Which is to serve, most intimately, the dust of the feet of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. So let us serve by opening our hearts and opening our ears to hear from our guest today, Shruti Kirti Prabhu, Amekala Prabhu, Vishaka Prabhu, and Yadubar Prabhu, who will share with us their very, very personal, wonderful association that Prabhupada chose to bestow on them, of everyone in the universe. Let us very, very enthusiastically and gratefully welcome them to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. And sometime during the program, I may disappear because I am scheduled to give lecture for the Ratha Yatra in Nigri. So please forgive me if I disappear. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the wonderful introduction to all of us. Maharaj asked me to speak amongst us here, and I thought that we should start with Yadubar Prabhu, who is, he's our senior godbrother to all of us, having joined ISKCON Society back in 1970, when he first met Srila Prabhupada in Surat, India. So, you've been, of course, we know yesterday was his birthday, and the play, The Kidnapping of Rukmini, was offered to Yadubar Prabhu because all the devotees here are kidnapping him to Chapati Yatra here. So I think he's very easy to kidnap because he doesn't want to leave, you know. He loves it here very much. And it's because in all of you he sees Srila Prabhupada, because he sees the mercy that Srila Prabhupada showed him. We can all see it in all of the devotees here, and it's all shining through Radhanath Maharaj's example. So with that, Yadubar Prabhu, would you like to start this session about memories about Srila Prabhupada? Can we do that? Okay. Okay, well, we'll honor your wishes as a senior. So then, Pamekula, you can start since you're right next to me here. So you can give the microphone to Amekala Devi. She first met the devotees also in 1971. In Manchester, England. And at that time the temple was very, very small and there was no facility, so although she wanted to move in, it wasn't possible. And it wasn't made possible until almost 2 years later by the grace of Shriman George Harrison. Prabhupada, we know, used to, sometimes the devotees would say, shouldn't George get initiated? And he would say, it's not necessary. He's already Hari's son. So he's the son of Hari, he said. So he's already Hari, son of Hari. So by his grace, of course, they got the manor in Lechmore Heath area, which became Bhaktivedanta Manor. And as soon as that was purchased, then Amekkala, she moved into the temple there. And Prabhupada also came at that time, and she was almost immediately engaged in some personal service to Srila Prabhupada. So she'll begin. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. First, I'd like to thank all of you so much for all your kindness and hospitality. I wish I could say all your names and remember all your names, but I can't. It would take all day. I benefited so much spiritually from being here, and physically too. I have new glasses, new teeth. I've had work done that would have taken years in the West. I've worked for the last 15 years in community work, and especially with the teenagers. And when I travel around with my husband, people often ask me to talk about community. So I was really excited to come here to learn about your community, because everybody knows it's the best temple in the world, the most loving temple. And it didn't take me long to realize what your formula was, and that is Radhanath Maharaj. And I don't know what we can do about that. Maybe we can clone him or steal him, but anyway, kidnap him. But I want to thank him also for being such a good friend to my husband and myself, and my children are all very fond of him. I'll tell you about my first experience with Srila Prabhupada. They had just purchased Bhaktivedanta Manor, and I was quite a new devotee living there. And my service was to clean Prabhupada's rooms. And I was doing that for some time. And then we heard that Srila Prabhupada was coming. So I was kind of thinking, I had to clean his room, and I was thinking, should I go to the airport or not? Because when you go to the airport, everybody goes, so you actually don't really get a chance to see him. So I was scheming in my mind how I could actually, for the first time, when I see Prabhupada, really see him. So I stayed behind and I cleaned his rooms, and I went and collected rose petals, and I got a little basket. And I waited in the temple room. So when Srila Prabhupada arrives, everybody's behind him and he's in front. And at the manor, we have the deities there, and then there's a door there. So I just stood here waiting for that door to open. And I was so excited, I didn't know what to expect. This was the first time I was going to see my spiritual master. And I heard the cars pull up, big kirtan. And I was just looking at the door. I was so scared. And then I finally saw the door knob open. And in walked Srila Prabhupada. And he looked right at me and he folded his hands and went like this. And I just began to cry and cry and cry. And I bent down because I didn't want him to see me crying like this. And I was throwing flower petals at his feet as he walked towards the deities, because he always went to see the deities first. So that was my first experience of seeing Srila Prabhupada. And while he was there, I continued cleaning his room. But I never got to really see him face to face, because when you clean his room, you have to wait till he leaves and goes on his morning walk. And then when he comes back, you have to leave. So I didn't actually get to see him face to face, cleaning the room. I would listen to classes and things like that. So this went on for, I think he was there for a month? Yeah, he was there for quite some time. And I didn't get any personal association with him at that point. But then he left. And about 2 months later, I heard these ladies screaming, and they're running towards my room. And I thought, oh my God, what's happened? And they were banging on my door, and I opened my door, and they said, you have a letter from Srila Prabhupada. And I thought, wow, you know, why would Srila Prabhupada send me a letter? And I opened the letter, and Srila Prabhupada said, my dear daughter, I want to thank you so much for cleaning my room. He said, if you continue in devotional service, chant your 16 rounds, you will surely go back to Godhead in this lifetime. And I was just flabbergasted. I mean, I was just, you know, speechless. So that was my first experience with Srila Prabhupada, just showing so much mercy. And I didn't realize he even knew I'd cleaned his room, you know. And then the next time I saw Srila Prabhupada was in France. I was the head cook at the time. And again, Srila Prabhupada was coming. And when you're the head cook, you do everything. You buy the boga, you clean the kitchen, you do the chop up, you do everything from morning till night. And his servants had sent a list of things I had to buy. So I found everything except chapati flour. And in France, you couldn't buy chapati flour. And I was really scared at that. I was, you know, still quite a new devotee, and I was really scared to tell them that I couldn't find chapati flour. So I looked everywhere, and I found this flour that was absolutely very similar. And I tested it with the devotees, and nobody mentioned anything. You couldn't tell. It tasted the same. It looked the same. So I think Upendra was his servant at the time. And I got to assist Kasalya. I actually got to cook for Srila Prabhupada. And I was watching her because she was so expert. And she didn't notice anything. You know, the chapatis puffed up. Everything was fine. And she said, take the plate up when it was ready. So I went up to Srila Prabhupada's room, and Upendra was outside. And I said, here's Srila Prabhupada's plate. I was really nervous. And he said, no, go in, you take it. And I said, no, I can't go in there. He said, no, Prabhupada's taking his shower. He won't be out for a while. So I very reluctantly went in, and I opened the door, went in, and I went to put the plate down on the table where Srila Prabhupada eats. And at that moment, the door opened, the bathroom door, and there was Srila Prabhupada in his gamcha. And he just looked at me, and he was about where the altar is right there. And he looked at me and he said, so you could not get chapati flour? And I had not told one person about that chapati flour. He just knew. You want to speak? I can't think of any more stories. Oh yeah, well, another story. Again, I was in New York, and again I was in the kitchen. I was actually kind of running the restaurant there at the time. And this is a story about of a devotee, and to show the mercy of the spiritual master. There was one devotee called Rishi Kumar, and he was the most amazing cook. But he'd become very actually offensive to Srila Prabhupada. But he would still come to the restaurant and eat there. And I tried to keep friends with him, even though the other devotees said, oh, don't speak to him, he's a demon. And he would actually blame Prabhupada for not becoming a professional musician. And he was even he started to eat meat again. And this day, Srila Prabhupada was coming, and Rishi Kumar happened to turn up, and we were all on the sidewalk. And Rishi Kumar came over to me and said, oh, what's going on? And I told him Prabhupada was coming. And, you know, he just kind of shrugged his shoulders. And I thought, oh, God, no. I hope he doesn't say anything offensive. And Srila Prabhupada, out of everybody on the sidewalk, walked right up to Rishi Kumar. And he rubbed his head. He said, so are you going to cook for me? And I looked. And all the devotees around were saying, Prabhupada eats meat, he's offensive, blah, 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 you know, all these things. Prabhupada said, that's okay. So also again being in charge of the kitchen, I got to help him cook for Srila Prabhupada. So him and I cooked for a few days for Srila Prabhupada. So this is the mercy of Srila Prabhupada.
Rishi Kumar had been Prabhupada's personal servant as well, and like she said, he was a very expert cook. And I remember, of course, he had been gone for some time, and at that time the temple in New York was the 55th West 55th. Was very Prabhupada loved that temple in New York. It was a skyscraper in New York City, so it's just what Prabhupada wanted, that temple. And like she was saying, and I had mentioned that during the week as well, as soon as Prabhupada arrived, he knew immediately, and he just went right up to his servant, his disciple, and just encouraged him. And of course he was encouraged as he was cooking each day. As Prabhupada knew, just like he told that one devotee, it's not possible to forget Krishna. And sometimes this is what some of us would do, you know, some had fallen away, just tried to forget, but it wasn't possible. And the one thing he was attracted to, that he would come to the temple for, was to take prasadam. Even though he was also expert cook, it wasn't the same, so he would come to the temple to take prasadam. Prabhupada once said to me that not everyone can digest the philosophy. He said, but everyone can digest prasadam. So do you have any more? Okay. Should we continue with the ladies? We'll... Now we'll hear from Vishakha Devi. She was telling us yesterday at Yadubar's appearance day celebration, that Prabhupada said Yadubara came first. Between, they both came together, but Yadubara came first, and in natural methods she followed, and she joined ISKCON Prabhupada in 1971, also in India. And Prabhupada immediately engaged her in her photography work, which is so many pictures that you see of Srila Prabhupada were taken by Vishakha Devi over the years. She was always there. Actually, it was so nice. I've got to, for the first time after over 30 years, to get to know them. Imagine, see this here, only here at Chaupati Temple, we developed a relationship just like all of you do amongst each other all of the time. And Amekla and I have both got to know them, and we're so happy to know such wonderful devotees, such a wonderful couple in Krishna consciousness. And although I was with Prabhupada in 1972 and 73 and 74 and 75, and I saw them both, I never really knew them other than they were doing such wonderful service. And part of that, I think much of it was due to that we were so busy that we didn't take time even to develop personal relationships with one another. Prabhupada had us working so much because he knew we had a limited amount of time, and he always pressed to go on, saying things like, even if you have to give up your sleep, you must chant your 16 rounds, and so many things. So it was nice to have the opportunity in this last week to get to know both of you. And such nice devotees. So we'll hear from Vishakha Devi now.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvasesa Sanyavari Paskya Tade Shatane. So as I think all of you must know by now, Shruti Kirti Prabhu was a very expert servant of Srila Prabhupada. As you see him today, he's a very friendly, approachable person. So he was 30 years ago when he was serving Srila Prabhupada. And although we didn't have time at that time to sit and converse, always I had the feeling that he was highly dear to Srila Prabhupada and always there for whoever needed him and very generous with all the Mahaprasadam that he had from Srila Prabhupada. So we feel very fortunate that we've also been able to sit with him this past week and make a stronger connection. I was thinking that before Srila Prabhupada came to America, he was writing Srimad Bhagavatam in the Radha Damodara temple in Vrindavan. He wrote the first three volumes that he took with him when he first came on the Jaladuta. And in the preface to the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, we must know the present need of human society. What is that need? Human society is no longer bound by geographical limitations of communities and countries. Human society is not in the darkness of oblivion. It's made great strides in material comforts, in economic development, in education. And yet despite this, Prabhupada writes, there is what he calls a pinprick somewhere in the social body at large. And because of this pinprick, even over small issues, there will be great quarrel, war. People will die because of this pinprick. So we need a clue of how to find peace and friendship and harmony. And Srimad Bhagavatam, he writes, will give us this clue. Srimad Bhagavatam will guide us. And he says, Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for the re-spiritualization. It is a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. So when Srila Prabhupada came to the U.S., he was, to quote him, he was in the fag end of his life. He celebrated his 70th birthday aboard the boat Jaladuta. And what he wanted to do was to present an entire culture, one elderly gentleman. Now, how is it possible? Culture, we can understand, part of culture is what we saw for the past two nights, the wonderful dramas and the dance. That's an aspect, very important aspect of culture. Excuse me. This temple itself has so much culture, the paintings, the woodwork, the beautiful stone carvings outside, the stonework, the murtis, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, Srila Prabhupada, the care of the murtis, all this is culture. It's aspects of culture. But culture is also something much greater. Culture is the sum total of a way of living of human beings that's passed down from one generation to the next. So this one individual at the fag end of his life, he is going to bring an entire culture which is almost unknown in India at that time. It's lost in India, and he wants to bring it to the West. So how does he do that? How is it possible to do that? Excuse me. Because of Srila Prabhupada's character. What we've heard from Shruti Rupa Prabhu for the past week, we also heard from Harisari, glorious examples of Srila Prabhupada's character. I had the opportunity to look into this word character. It's a fascinating word. Several centuries ago, when it was first used, it meant a graphic design. It meant letters of the alphabet, a distinctive mark. And another meaning of character was imprint on the soul. Because the letters of the alphabet at that time, centuries ago, were used to describe God, to describe God's devotees, to describe God's activities. And they made an imprint on the soul of those who heard those activities. They were purifying. This is character. So one who has the imprint of the soul means that, as Radhanath Maharaj was saying this morning, there is no false ego. you can experience the purity of that person, their pure spiritual identity, being in their presence. And so it was being in the presence of Srila Prabhupada. When a person is not materially ambitious, when they don't have any desire for fame, for wealth, not a tinge of desire for exploitation, this person is incredibly attractive and incredibly powerful. And that person can imprint that spiritual energy on those that he contacts. And that is, in fact, what Srila Prabhupada did. And in that way, he was able, step by step, day by day, to transport this incredible culture to the Western shores and from there throughout the world. So we're very fortunate to have come in contact with that potency. It is not something that should be taken casually. Out of millions and millions of births, one gets the opportunity to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. It is something very sacred and very rare. So as we hear the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, we can appreciate all the multifarious aspects of purity, spiritual purity, and of this pure culture that he brought with him for all of us. So I think everyone is waiting for anecdotes. Anecdotes are so pleasurable and easy to hear, so I will relate one small anecdote into the vast ocean of Srila Prabhupada anecdotes. This was in Vrindavan. Prabhupada was going on a morning walk. He left the Krishna Balaram temple, and at that time the moon was up. And he looked at the moon and he said, "Oh, tomorrow will be Ekadasi." He said, "You should know by how much of the moon you can see when Ekadasi is coming." So I've been trying to do that for many years and I still can't do it. Recently there was some discrepancy about the last day of the Damodar month. In the Juhu temple in ISKCON, they ended that month one day earlier than we ended it here. So I went out and studied the moon to see if it was full. And even with the full moon, I couldn't quite make out. I think we did it properly, actually, here. But he went on with the walk, and he was talking about the moon. And he said, "The moon is covered by ice. That's why the rays of the moon are cooling." So normally I never said anything. I was there as the photographer, and I didn't participate. But this one morning, somehow or other, I said, "Srila Prabhupada, in Bhagavad Gita, it says that the moonlight makes vegetables succulent. So how is that?" So Prabhupada stopped walking. He was walking, and he stopped walking. And that was rather shattering, because everyone gathered in a circle around him. And he was looking directly at me. And that was also very unnerving because he had dark eyes that could see past the body. So he was looking at me and he said, "Why don't you ask him?" So I still have not yet asked him. But I hope to. And then Srila Prabhupada went on walking. It's your
Shrivadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutare Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavani Paskyatare Satarine. I'd like to somewhat continue Amekulas Prabhu's description of Srila Prabhupada's appreciation and encouragement to everyone he met. And I'd like to tell about the time that Vishakha Devi came to India. I had come a couple of months early in December 1970 for photography work, and she followed some months later. And we met Srila Prabhupada in his room at Akash Ganga building on Warden Road. And at that time, our idea was to do a story, a photographic essay on an Indian village in India to show what somewhat of the culture of India through a small village, through photographing a small village. So one of the devotees said, well, why don't you ask Srila Prabhupada? So we did that, and his first reply was that you should go to Vrindavan. And he said, if you go anywhere else, if you go to another village, your cameras will be stolen. As if they wouldn't be in Vrindavan also. But that was his idea, we should go there. And before that, Vishakha presented Prabhupada with a book she had done. A book on macro photography, which is close-up photography. And she was actually quite brilliant in her professional career. She was only a sophomore when she came out with, in college, second year of college, when she came out with this book. And the book was reviewed by the foremost photo historian in the world at that time, and a very, very popular photographer also, one of the 10 best photographers in the world. So she had a very flourishing, upcoming career. So that professional career was somewhat ended when she came to India to meet Srila Prabhupada. And she stepped into another career, a better career, I feel. So Srila Prabhupada, actually, she had come. Vishakha came from a very atheistic family. And one time Srila Prabhupada asked her how she became Krishna conscious, coming from such an atheistic background, atheistic parents. On one side mostly. That was the upbringing. And her answer was, it is by your mercy, Srila Prabhupada, that I have come to Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada's answer was, no, it is by Krishna's mercy. So anyway, back to his instruction to, or his suggestion to go to Vrindavan. We went to Vrindavan and spent a month there. And Vishakha was never so much interested in Krishna consciousness. Somehow or other, I was spontaneously attracted, but she was a little more hesitant, to say the least, in the beginning. And actually, Srila Prabhupada's instruction was perfect for her, because she actually became attracted to Krishna in Vrindavan. For that, we spent 1 month there, and I remember Guru Das Prabhu in Calcutta asked us to come to Calcutta to produce a Vyas Puja book for Srila Prabhupada. I think this was sometime maybe in end of June or July. So I was very eager to go, because I was eager for some service. We had been spending a month in Vrindavan, not so much directly, of course not directly engaged in service, but doing our photography. And Vishakha was very, very reluctant to leave. She was by then very attached to Vrindavan. So that was Srila Prabhupada's genius, that he could, by that small instruction, that suggestion, that was for where Vishakha became attracted to Krishna, and therefore attracted to Srila Prabhupada. So and also when I first came, well, the point is of that story, I think, is that Srila Prabhupada appreciated what she had done from the beginning. Her book, her idea to go to Vrindavan or to photograph an Indian village, And he encouraged her at every step. So that is Prabhupada's genius, that he, of course, and of course his Krishna consciousness, that he encouraged everyone he met. No matter what level they were at, he would encourage them. So that's a very, very important lesson for all of us. And in my own experience also, I came as a photographer and asked Srila Prabhupada if I could join his party. And initially Prabhupada was not so encouraging. I think you've heard that story before. But he allowed me to stay very kindly. And he encouraged me. I remember I would sit in his room for hours and hours in Surat, and people would come in, Srila Prabhupada would preach, and of course he would encourage them, but he also encouraged me indirectly. He would, as a person came in, he would introduce me. He would say, "This is Mr. John. He is from America, and he is very expert in photography." Every time he would do that practically. So of course for me that was very encouraging. And Srila Prabhupada, as Imakula Prabhu was also mentioning in her story about the flour dough, or about the flour, Srila Prabhupada also knew everyone's heart. He knew our consciousness. And of course there are many, many stories how Srila Prabhupada would sometimes encourage and sometimes ignore, actually, if our consciousness was not proper. Brahmatirtha has a story in that regard. And also, I also have another story. In Mayapur, I think it was 1976, Vishakha Devi and I had come, just arrived in Prabhupada, I mean in Mayapur, and we went to see Srila Prabhupada in his room. And I had brought a gift of $100 bill. And Vishakha had brought a jar of honey to give Srila Prabhupada. So I was thinking this $100 is much more valuable than that jar of honey. And I was somewhat proud. So we went in and paid obeisances. And I gave Srila Prabhupada the $100 bill. And he looked at it and just put it aside. Didn't even look at me, practically. And then Vishakha Devi gave him the jar of honey and his eyes got very big. And he said, "Oh, you brought honey." Maybe she remembers it differently. He was very, very appreciative. So he could tell, Srila Prabhupada could tell our consciousness. And he would treat us accordingly. So consciousness is practically everything. Srila Prabhupada entitled his name to society, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And Prabhupada, you know, understood everyone's consciousness and tried to preach in such a way that our consciousness would be elevated. So, next.
Okay, Amekala has a few more little stories. What Yadavara said is so nice. I got to see that this was natural. Sometimes we would become proud before Srila Prabhupada. And like he was saying, he always knew what Prabhupada responded to humility, you know, the humility of a devotee, and he would give you so much when we remained humble. In Vrindavan, I always remember the time when Prabhupada saw this one devotee walking and he just said, "What are you doing?" You know, and the devotee said, "Oh, Prabhupada, I'm chanting 64 rounds a day." And immediately Prabhupada said, "Yes, and then what do you do?" So as soon as someone was filled with that pride, because he was happy to tell Prabhupada how much he was chanting, but then Prabhupada was not impressed with his 64 rounds a day, saying, "Well, then what did you do?" You know, so he had to be very careful. When Maharaj was speaking about becoming the atoms, you know, just one of the atoms of dust at the feet of the Lord, it reminded me of one story so quickly. And I'll tell it in a Mekalikan speak. And it was before I had become Prabhupada's servant, and it happened in New Dwarka. I was saying how I would read Krishna book every day in the garden to Srila Prabhupada with the other devotees. And it was by the grace of Kirtanananda Maharaj that I got access to Prabhupada from the beginning. And it was the first day we were in there, in this garden, and it had just been landscaped and all. So that day was just Prabhupada was there, and Maharaj, Kirtanananda Maharaj, and myself. And there was one brahmachari that was living in the temple in New Dwarka. And his parents had arranged and provided all the plants and all that were used for making the garden there in Los Angeles, which was so beautiful, and Prabhupada liked it so much. So they were also there. They were getting darshan of Srila Prabhupada. And so immediately Prabhupada was told that, you know, the brahmachari introduced him as his parents and said they've helped with the garden. So Prabhupada smiled and thanked them. And as he would do so often, he said, "Your son is a very nice boy, you know, very nice boy." And the mother, of course, immediately, she knew he was a nice boy. His mothers know their sons are always nice boys. And she said, "Yes," said, "he's very nice." He said, "But he was going to college, and now he's given up his schooling and he's just living at the temple." And they like devotees, they like the Krishna consciousness, but not that he had given everything up. And she said, "But it seems like he has no ambition." And Prabhupada agreed and said, "Yes, he has no ambition. He just wants to do some service for Krishna." And she was rather startled. And Prabhupada said, "That is a devotee. He has no ambition. He just wants to serve Krishna." And Kirtanananda, he was sitting next to me and he could see this situation. And he thought and he said, "What Prabhupada means to say is he has no material ambition." The devotee has no material ambition. He just has his ambition is in devotional service. So he kind of corrected his spiritual master. And Prabhupada looked at him and he shouted. And he said, "No, he has no ambition. He just wants to do a little service for Krishna." And he emphasized it. Kirtanananda put his head down. Yeah. So we have to be very careful understanding this principle. We're eager to do service, but we have no ambition for anything. Just want to do a little service for Krishna. A Mekala?
Just a couple of short things. At that time when Srila Prabhupada first came and I was cleaning his rooms, we would often sit in the bathroom next to his darshan room and just kind of peek in and see who he was talking to. And a lot of famous people actually would come to the man. Of course, George Harrison would come. Another famous person in England called Donovan, who you probably don't know. But this one very famous race car driver came, and he was the fastest in the world, very, very famous. And he came in and sat down, and Prabhupada spent about an hour talking to him, and Prabhupada described the workings of the car. He knew everything about racing cars. I could not believe it. It was just an amazing conversation. I don't know if it was ever recorded. But and then I was thinking about pride and how merciful it was that Prabhupada sent me that letter. But also at that time when Prabhupada was there, I got to go out twice in the evening to life members to take prasadam There was only maybe 12 of us. And my girlfriend had told me, her name is Sava, she's one of my best friends, that one time she was wearing a sari, and it was a yellow sari, and it had gold all over it. And it was actually very gaudy, if you know what that word means. It was, do you know what that word means, gaudy? Yeah. It wasn't such a nice sari, I didn't think, but Prabhupada told her when he saw her, he said, "Oh, very beautiful sari." So I thought, you know, that night I was going to be going out to dinner with Srila Prabhupada, so I wanted him to notice me. So I went all over looking for a replica of the sari, and she described it. And I found one, but he never mentioned anything to me, because I was looking for it. Yeah. So, and then another story was when I was in France, when Prabhupada was leaving, we drove back from the chateau to Paris, and I jumped into the car behind Srila Prabhupada, myself and Satarupa, who was the famous model. And Srila Prabhupada was in the car in front with Bhagavan, and we had a basket of flowers. And every time the car would stop, we would jump out of the car and run to Prabhupada's car and give him a flower, and then run back into our car. We did this about 30, 40 times, and Prabhupada was just laughing every time we did it. And when we arrived at the final destination, Bhagavan later told us that Prabhupada said, yes, they're very devotional. But he also said, because he didn't drive very fast, and I wanted to mention this, because in India, it's so scary the way people drive here. And Srila Prabhupada actually said, Krishna gets out of the car once you go faster than 55. He actually leaves the car. Oh, one more story. Just one more story. At Bhaktivedanta Manor one time, we were on a morning walk, and as we were walking around the manor, all of a sudden Srila Prabhupada spoke to somebody, and there was nobody there, and we all looked, and we heard Prabhupada said, "Go away." It was near the pond, and you know, the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada, "Who are you talking to?" He said, "Oh, there was two ghosts." And we were just like, "Wow," you know. And we said, "There's ghosts?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes, wall to wall." And he said, "But you must chant Nisringadev prayers." And later on, he said there were two children that came up to him. And later on we did some research, and two children had died in the pond at the manor there. So we kind of think maybe those were the children that came up to him and got his mercy.
Another aspect of Srila Prabhupada was that he was the perfect gentleman. So I can illustrate that with a couple of stories that I personally experienced. When we first aired our film, the first film of the Hare Krishna movement called The Hare Krishna People, we were in Mayapur, and it was Gaur Purnima time. So all the devotees had come from all around the world. And it was going to be shown in Srila Prabhupada's room. And Srila Prabhupada's room in Mayapur is not very big. So when the devotees heard about this premiere showing of the first film, all the GBC and the sannyasis and the temple presidents, they came to Prabhupada's room and sat there with Prabhupada, and very quickly the room filled up. Just like here, you're sitting so close together. So there, they're even more close together. And I was standing at the doorway. I had participated in making the film, and I had a desire to sit with Prabhupada while he watched it for the first time. And he was leaning on his bolster, and he looked around the room and saw me standing in the doorway, and he realized my plight, that I had nowhere, there was no space for me. So then he said, "You come and sit here," and he pointed to a spot right next to him, which was open because the devotees didn't want to crowd him. That was one incident. A second one was also in Mayapur. There was a devotee named Siddha Sarupananda who went out early in the morning and got a big vat of date ras, which was tapped from the trees in Mayapur early in the morning. And he had small clay cups, and he put them on Prabhupada's table, and he filled them up with his fresh date ras. And he handed one to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada indicated me, and he said, "Ladies first."
Srila Prabhupada also referred to Vishakha when he would address her as Vishakha Prabhu. Sometimes that is not widely known. She was mentioning before about the imprint that Srila Prabhupada had. I was thinking about that in relationship to a lecture that Srila Prabhupada gave at Kartikeya Mahadevia's home. I know that Shruti Kirti and Amapla recently went there, visited yesterday, I believe. We heard many lectures there, but there was this one lecture that Srila Prabhupada was emphasizing like anything. I couldn't believe how forceful he was, that it was the duty of those born in India to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. he was actually, you know, pointing his finger, thrusting his finger forward at those in the audience. And they were almost, you know, reacting. You know, they were almost being pushed back by the force of Srila Prabhupada's lecture. And I think that force is still being imprinted, you can say, on the people of Bombay. And when I see so many of the local people joining, I can't help but remember that lecture. He was so, so forceful. Do you remember that, Shri Kirti Prabhu?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It was a theme here in India, Prabhupada really pressed, yeah. But yes.
But that one day he was almost yelling. He was so, you know, forcefully encouraging, you can say.
One of the points that Srila Prabhupada made at that lecture, he said, "India is the land of religion, and it has become so fallen that now you must import milk powder and brahmanas." So we can continue that theme that Prabhupada himself had to go to the West and create brahmanas and import them to India. But now some of those brahmanas, it's like father and son, they have an import-export business. So some of those brahmanas that are imported, they have made brahmanas here that can now be exported.
Hare Krishna.
So he was saying, yesterday I went back to Kartikeya Mahadevia's house. It was my first trip there since January of 1973, and they didn't know who was coming. They just knew a Prabhupada disciple was coming. And in fact, what was his name that brought me? Srinathji. He had told them the wrong name. So when I got there, I saw, of course, his Mrs. Mahadevi was there, and the son, the father, Kartikeya, he's passed away. But the son was there, Kirtan, who is now, I think, about 43 years old. So when I was there, he was 13. But when I walked in, they were just cordial and said hello. And then they said, "What is your name?" And I said, "Shruti Kirti." And the mother, her face just lit up, and then she immediately remembered me, because we were there for 6 weeks. And she was so happy. And then he remembered me as well, because I was the young one. As I said, when I traveled with this party, I was just 21 years old, and my godbrothers were 26, 27 years old, and much more experienced in devotional service and being with Prabhupada. But I was very new and a little bit shy. Anyway, they were very, very nice. And not only did I get to see Prabhupada's typewriter yesterday, which Prabhupada sold to Kartikeya, as we heard last week, for about 500 rupees, after staying there his entire party, taking up half of the flat for 6 weeks, he then turned around and sold them the typewriter. But she went in her bedroom, and she came out with another bag, and in it was the Ewer tape recorder that I would use for over a year in recording Prabhupada's lectures all over India and his conversations and morning walk conversations. And she just pulls this out. And they had kept this tape recorder. And I tried, I said, because you liked me so much. Maybe. I said, that's my tape recorder. And they just looked and laughed. And they're not ready to part with anything. So they have such great love for Prabhupada. But she said several times to me that she was just so happy because she could remember. She remembered so much of those days. And she laughed. She told Amekala, she said, when they were here, because that's when I had jaundice. And despite my jaundice, I also had a big appetite at the same time. And Prabhupada told her, don't give Srutakirti more than 5 or 6 chapatis. So he put a limit on my eating there because I was recuperating from my jaundice. So Prabhupada was always just taking such nice care of all of us. And he always took very nice care of me. And he observed so much what I was eating and what I was doing. So he gave her that instruction. And she very happily, she was making him his puffed rice. Right? I told that story the other day, how much he liked puffed rice and peanuts. So Prabhupada had her making these things for him as well. And she just, and that was it. You know, she also, Prabhupada was like a father to her. And she just enjoyed, Prabhupada would do that. He knew just what to do so that you would serve him and love him. And whatever relationship was required, he would give you that relationship. He was so expert. And of course, Prabhupada loved. He had such great love for everyone. And I remember when I went in there, they showed me Prabhupada's room where he stayed, which was the master bedroom, which I could recognize all. And then I said, where did I stay? And he showed me. And I said, I used to massage Prabhupada here. And he said, no. He said, that's Prabhupada's room there. I said, yes. I said, but I remember I would massage Prabhupada here because that's where the morning sun would come in. So Prabhupada would naturally, he would, wherever the sunshine was, that's where Prabhupada would take his massage. It didn't matter if it was in a hallway. Sometimes it was beside a swimming pool or in a garden. And Prabhupada would find that morning sun to take his massage. There was one other, I just wanted to tell one. Yes.
I just wanted to say one thing on that story yesterday, because my husband probably won't. When we first arrived, like he said, they didn't know, his name wasn't, they didn't give his name properly, and when he introduced himself as Srutakirti, they were more than pleased. I mean, the mother was in tears, and the son said that, you know, you were our favorite, we liked you the best, you were always the nicest. They were so overwhelmed to see him. Just wanted to mention.
So just one short story, and I'll be finished. I thought I would tell because we were talking about the puffed rice. And this is one of my favorite stories because it's just so remarkable to see how Krishna inspires us when the desire is there to come to Krishna. Just like we all have our stories, but this one story is an illustration of how anything can happen if we take one step towards Krishna. And this happened in South America. And it was a flight between Mexico City when Prabhupada was flying to Caracas, Venezuela. And we were on an airline. It was a South American airline. And the devotees in Mexico City, Prabhupada also asked for puffed rice for the flight. It was a morning flight. So he asked one Mataji, she made a big, it was an Indian lady. He would always search out, if he could, one Indian lady devotee, and she would make prasadam. So she made a big batch of puffed rice and peanuts for the flight. And it was just packaged in aluminum foil. And I had it in my bag. So after the plane took off, and everything was done again. Prabhupada was at the window where he always sat, his window seat, and I was in the center. And Paramahamsa Swami, he was next to me. So the plane was in the air and all the lights were off. And Prabhupada just looked and said, okay, said prasadam. So I just opened up, that's all I had. I just opened up the foil and placed it, put his table down and placed it in front of him. So Prabhupada just started eating, and he would chew. You know, Prabhupada chewed his food very nicely as well, and he was chewing. Always enjoyed. It was such a pleasure to watch Prabhupada take prasadam. It was a pleasure to watch Prabhupada do anything. Taking prasadam was delightful. And he would do it so neatly, and he ate about half of it. It was a fairly large quantity of puffed rice. So he ate about half of the puffed rice. And then he just looked at me and said, okay. He said, now you can take. So we would just take his remnants. We were so fortunate, you know, we would just take Prabhupada's remnants right there. So I took it and I ripped it in half. And I put half on the one sheet of aluminum foil and I put the other on in the other half and I put it to Paramahamsa. He was sitting right next to the aisle on the plane. So then Prabhupada hadn't even cleaned yet. He was just sitting there and allowing us to eat. So we both started eating our puffed rice with Prabhupada sitting next to us. And one stewardess, just a young lady, she was an attendant on the flight attendant. She started walking by and she stopped right in front of us. Paramahamsa is on the aisle seat. There's a sannyasi. But she stopped right in front of us and she leaned over and took a handful of my puffed rice right off of my plate and threw it in her mouth. Has anyone ever taken food off of your plate while you're anyone in your whole life? So this is what happened. This lady, she was inspired. For some reason, she was inspired by this maha prasadam sitting there on my plate. And she came by and threw it in her mouth. And then she just looked at me and said, this is very good, she said. What is it? So I was in a little bit of shock. And Prabhupada was just sitting there. And Paramahamsa was a little bit surprised as well. But Prabhupada was just sitting there, didn't say anything. And so I told her, I said, it's puffed rice. And I said, we have a special diet. I said, we're vegetarian. And she said, oh, she said, it's very good. I said, yes, it's very good. She said, would you like anything else? She said, in first class, she said, they have, you know, so many things. There's fruit and anything you want. And I looked at Prabhupada, I said, Prabhupada, would you like anything else? He said, hot milk. So I said, we'll all have some hot milk. And she said, okay. So she came back and she brought back, for all of us, she brought us hot milk and she brought back fruit. She had cut up all this fruit that she got from the first class section. We were still in coach for this flight. She brought back some fruit and some cheese and she gave it all to us. And while she was gone, I said, Prabhupada, I said, that was very strange. And Prabhupada said, it's a natural inclination of women, he said, to serve. He said, they have a natural devotional tendency. And I was just so surprised. But Prabhupada just made like it was nothing special. But it was very special. It was Prabhupada's Mahaprasadam, which he didn't make anything special about. We knew we were very fortunate. But she was doing something that no professional person would ever do. But she was inspired from within to just to take. I never knew what happened to this lady at all, of course, but anyone gets, you know, such mercy, huh? From the pure devotees, certainly their life is successful. So it was just such an amazing event. And I'll never forget it happening. You know. So is Maharaj, would you like to? No. Oh, should we continue a little more? Or would you like? Okay.
Since you were talking about the manor, stories at the manor, I had a few from there. One time, a famous singer called Donovan at the Bhaktivedanta Manor visited Srila Prabhupada. He brought a friend with him. And the friend announced during the conversation that he was God. All of a sudden he just came out with that. And Srila Prabhupada said, oh. He said, so what is the definition of God? And he couldn't answer, even though he was so-called God. And he seemed like a normal person. So Prabhupada asked someone to get the dictionary. And he looked up the definition of God. And I believe that the word there was omniscient, meaning all-knowing. So Prabhupada asked him, he said, so you are omniscient? And he couldn't answer. Actually, he said no. Remember, were you there? You were there? No. So this so-called God was easily defeated. Another time a reporter came to visit Srila Prabhupada, and it was summer, but even though it was summer, it was quite, you know, chilly compared to a summer here. And she had a miniskirt on. Her legs were bare. So she asked the question of Srila Prabhupada during her interview. She said, why do you shave your head? And Srila Prabhupada immediately said, why do you shave your legs? And he said, better to have a cool head. He said, in order to understand this Krishna consciousness philosophy, you need a cool head. So everybody just broke up. What was that?
Prabhupada said, warm legs and a cool head.
Another time, George Harrison visited Srila Prabhupada, and he brought with him several Indian ladies and gentlemen. And one of them was Lakshmi Shankar, I believe a relative of Ravi Shankar. And George had brought an album that he had recently recorded, a song called Krishna, Where Are You? Has anyone heard this song, Krishna, Where Are You? Hardly anyone. It's on an album, I believe, called Ravi Shankar Family and Friends. It's a beautiful song. So he played it for Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada closed his eyes and he was tapping along with in time with the music. And then afterwards, Srila Prabhupada, he expressed his appreciation. And he said, this is the proper mood, searching for Krishna. Not that we found Krishna, but we're always searching for Krishna. And George was very happy. of course, there are many pastimes of Prabhupada and George. That's the only time I saw him or met him. But their relationship was very wonderful, very intimate. And remember, during that time, Prabhupada would be alone many times with George, and sometimes their conversations would go late into the night, and sometimes we'd hear them laughing together. So we're always imagining what was going on behind those closed doors. But of course, George contributed so much to preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world. There are many, many devotees who have expressed that they came to Krishna consciousness through George's songs, hearing the Hare Krishna mantra through George's songs. And Srila Prabhupada would never, of course, never pressed him in any way to become a devotee. The only time he insisted that Shyamasundar Prabhu ask him for a donation for the Krishna book. That's a very amazing story. You've probably heard that. But generally, Srila Prabhupada was very, very, just very, very friendly and encouraging all the time with anybody he met. Anything else from the matter? Shruti Kirji?
Well, you mentioned Donovan. He came. I was listening to the conversation. Was that the time when he came with the women? He came in with two. He had two beautiful women with him at the time, and you were there, right? I can't remember the story as good as you, so.
Wasn't that Prabhupada? Donovan was a famous folk singer, and this was 1972, so. Of course, George had been there, so every day different people were coming. This was Shyamasundar's expertise. He would always get the most famous people to come and visit Prabhupada. So at the time, I guess this Donovan, he was probably around late 20s or so, but he had these two, they were very young ladies with him as well. And Prabhupada was speaking to him, and he was showing some interest, and he was listening, and Prabhupada was speaking about, you know, Krishna consciousness, devotional service, principles, all these things. And then there was some pause, and one of the ladies, she just spoke into his ear, and then of course we know what happened next. He said, Swamiji, it was very nice to spend this time with you, he said, but I have some things I have to do. He said, I have to go and do some things. So then, of course, he got up and left, and his lady friends went with him. And as soon as he left, Prabhupada said, just see, he said, with one who was too attached to women, he said, she became frightened. If he would become Krishna conscious, then what would become of her, you know, so...
Yeah. Actually, about 15 years later, I was in New York, and at the restaurant there, at New York restaurant, and I heard that Donovan was playing in the park. And actually, Prabhupada said he was a nice person, but because of the women. And so I thought I would try and take prasadam to him. And he was on stage, and he had all these bodyguards, and again, he had these beautiful women surrounding him. And as he was coming off stage, I was stood there, had a plate of prasadam, I had my sari on and tilak. And they were taking him to his car, and all of a sudden he got a glimpse of me. And he said, stop. And he came walking over to me, and he said, oh, Hare Krishna. And I said, I brought you some prasadam. He said, oh, that's so nice. And he took the prasadam, and again, the women were dragging him away. And I gave him the card and I said, please come to the restaurant. And he actually came to the restaurant the next night and took prasadam. So that was 15 years later. Which one?
Well, he showed up at your son's graduation. That was funny, but that's another story. So Yadavar Prabhu was speaking when George Harrison was there. Of course, I was with Prabhupada at that time. I was his servant at that time. And I remember when George was there and Prabhupada asked him about his chanting. He said, are you chanting 16 rounds? And George smiled and he said, Prabhupada, he said, I was chanting 16 rounds. He said, but what happened is, he said, after some time, he said, I'm chanting my rounds. He said, then I lost my desire to do any of my business. He said, I have so many business obligations. He said, there's so many things going on. He said, but the more I chant it, he said, I just didn't want to do it anymore. He said, so I've decreased. And Prabhupada smiled. He said, you chant as much as you can. He said, it's all right. But George confessed to him that he had to make that choice, and I guess he decided that he needed to do his business activities, he said. So, but he was very, very sweet. Prabhupada had great love. He encouraged him as well always to eat. Lots of, when he would come to see Prabhupada, Prabhupada would force feed him so much prasadam. He would always say, I've eaten, I didn't, Prabhupada, never mind. And of course, he had so many devotees, they would be bringing and just be putting plates of prasadam in front of George. And Prabhupada would say, take, and Prabhupada said to him the one time, he said, there is no harm, you can take as much prasadam as you want. Prasadam cannot harm you, he would say. And George would try to satisfy Prabhupada's desire and eat. And then they were talking, and for some reason they got on the topic of sleep. And as Prabhupada had said that to me, on different occasions Prabhupada would say it, and he said it to George. He said, I hate sleep. He said, when I go to sleep, I think simply wasting my time. Now I am going to waste my time. That's what he would say to me sometimes. He would lie down and he would look at me and say, now I'm going to waste my time. He said, I hate sleeping so much. So he would say this to George. And George started laughing. He said, me too. He said, I hate sleep. And then the two of them started laughing and they were saying, sleeping, I don't like to sleep at all. So they just wanted to do their work. And Prabhupada never liked to sleep. And then he would lie down. That's why he was so amazing, Prabhupada. He would say, I hate to sleep. And then sometimes, like once in Hawaii, he was speaking to Guru Kripa and myself in beautiful quarters he had in Hawaii, with just like Mayapur, the breeze would blow through. It was Nunavadwip. Nunavadwip it was in Hawaii. And he had windows on both sides and the breezes would just blow through. So it was after lunch, it was light out. And Prabhupada was talking to us and he was sitting up in bed. And he said, now I am going to take rest. And he laid down, but he didn't just lay down. As he was sitting up, he grabbed his covers. And as he went to lay down, in one movement, he just laid down and he pulled the covers over his head and he disappeared under his covers. And Guru Kripa and I, we just looked at each other and we shook our heads. And it was just like a little boy. Prabhupada was so much innocence. It was just wonderful. He just pulled him over and disappeared, and we were left there alone. So we just offered obeisances and left the room. He had no formalities, Prabhupada, when he wanted to. He was from another world. He had nothing to do with this world. One more short story. Just a short story and then I'll be finished. And I was wondering, this was the one story I wanted to tell. So this really shows that Prabhupada was just completely detached from anything within this world. How he just did as he liked, being an ambassador here from the spiritual world. And this was in Australia. And Prabhupada was taking what was not a very long flight. It was from Sydney to Melbourne. And arrangements were made that he would take prasadam, his lunch prasadam, at the airport because it wasn't ready yet. And Mudit Visa was going to bring him the deity plates, and he would take his lunch in the, transfer lounge, like in the lounge there at the airport. So anyway, Prabhupada was off the plane. And we're sitting there and we're waiting, and a half hour goes by and an hour goes by and Mudit Visa hasn't turned up with the prasadam. And Prabhupada hasn't eaten. So now I'm in so much anxiety, and Prabhupada said, where is Mudit Visa? He was supposed to bring. So he never came the whole time. So now, just as we're about to get on the plane, or boarding the plane, it was a big 747 at the time. This was called the jumbo jet. And Prabhupada was in first class. Prabhupada and myself had seats in first class. And the Mudha visa comes with the plates, and now they're saying it's time to board. So, and he's apologizing to Prabhupada profusely, saying they wouldn't let me in. I couldn't get in. There was some difficulty. And Prabhupada said, never mind. He said, we'll take on the plane. So, he gives me these plates. They're the deity's plates, all silver and goblets of water, goblets of juice, and all this prasadam and beautiful silver plate and katoris. So Prabhupada walks into the plane. We're walking into the first class section of the 747 and sat down. It was like the first two seats, and it was a very big room. This was roomy. This was not what I had been used to in traveling with Prabhupada over 2 years, but now they had first class tickets for Prabhupada. So Prabhupada sat down, and I sat down beside him. And again, there's only maybe 20 seats in this very large room, this first class compartment. And there was a spiral staircase that went up to another, was a bar in the plane. Anyway, there was a spiral staircase going up. And there's only 20 passengers and 6 or 7 attendants just taking care. So even as the plane hasn't taken off, they're, would you like water? Would you like juice? Give me your coat. You know, they're so nice to you in first class on an airplane. So Prabhupada immediately sat down, and a lady came up and, can I take your coat? So I took his gave him the coat, and this big saffron coat Prabhupada had, right? Hands her the coat, and she put it away in the closet there in the first class compartment. And I put this big tray in front of Prabhupada, so he was ready to eat because he hadn't eaten and he was ready to take prasadam. So as everyone's coming into the plane, Prabhupada just starts eating, and I'm sitting right next to him, so everything was very nice. I was happy to see him. And Prabhupada's taking prasadam, and water's there, juice's there, and he's eating very happily, and as he did, very reverently. So then they're making announcements, and the plane is getting ready to take off, and the seatbelt sign goes on, and no smoking signs are on, and Prabhupada's just taking prasadam. So no one said anything, even though the lady looked at me, and I just looked at her, and she turned away, and the plane's going down the runway, and Prabhupada's taking prasadam. It's completely transcendental. And I'm like, oh, something's going to happen. Someone's going to say something. But he just continued to eat. And as the plane's going down the runway, there's things, and I'm holding, just like I said, I was holding the deities on the altar. Now I'm holding Prabhupada's glasses so that they didn't fall over, because it's bouncing along the runway. And Prabhupada's just eating and eating. So finally the plane's going up into the air. Prabhupada never stopped. He just continued to eat. And the plane goes, and it's rising up, and I'm still holding on to the glasses, and he's not looking at me or anything. He's transcendental. And he just continued to eat until he was finished. So the plane's all the way up in the air now, a few miles high in the air, and when he was done, then he turned to me and he said, okay, now you can take. And that was it. He just never stopped. Nothing. And that's how it was with Prabhupada. And it was so wonderful. I love to travel with Prabhupada because we only saw him in the temples. You never saw Prabhupada, how he dealt with public, very often. You know, it wasn't something. And he dealt with them however he wanted. That's how he dealt with them. He would always do whatever he wanted. One time on the plane, he turned to me and he started laughing. He said, I'm an old man. I can do whatever I please. But he was transcendental, and he could do whatever he pleased. And he would do whatever he pleased. He didn't mind mundane conventions. He was not impressed. As I would say, when the fastened seatbelt sign would go on, that was his cue to get up and use the bathroom. Because because then it was free, it was available, and then it meant he was going to land soon, so that's when he would get up to use the bathroom. And inevitably they would say, you know, you have to sit down, and I would just say, you tell him, I can't tell him. And no one would ever say anything to Prabhupada. And if they did, he didn't hear, you know. He didn't speak that line, whatever it was. He would just walk and ignore. That was Prabhupada's method, and no one would say anything to him. So then when he got up, I would get up and follow him down this plane as it was tilting back and forth. And he would go in the bathroom, and I would stand outside the door holding on to the seats and hoping no one would say anything to me, you know. And then he would get out and go sit back down when he was ready. So it was just so wonderful. There was one really horrible thing that happened, though. It was so terrible when Prabhupada was finished prasadam, because it was the deity's plates, right? And so when he was finished, I certainly couldn't eat off the deity plates. Prabhupada would eat off the deity plates, right? Because he was Prabhupada. He did whatever. Sometimes devotees would say, how do you offer the foodstuff when you would cook for Prabhupada? And I would say, huh? They would say, well, do you offer it? I would say, yes. I would bring it into his room and put it down and offer it to him. And they say, don't you say prayers? And I say, what am I supposed to say? I'd say, I would give it to Prabhupada. And they would say, well, don't you offer it to the deities? And I say, I don't offer it to deities. We only offer to Prabhupada. That's what we would do. We can't offer to Krishna. I say, we can only offer to my spiritual master. I say, so that's what I would do. I would bring it in and put it down. And Prabhupada would take. Once in New Dwarka, he went into kitchen. He sometimes would do inspections. And New Dwarka had a very high standard, you know, very first class. And he walked in and he looked. He was in the kitchen and there was these big strawberries, like this big, red, bright red strawberries. And Prabhupada walked by and he said, oh, he said, what is that? When Mataji, she said, oh, there's strawberries, Prabhupada. And he said, oh, and he grabbed one, and she said, they're boga, Prabhupada. And he said, oh, and he popped it in his mouth. Prabhupada would show us his position. What did we think we were doing, you know? We become so overwhelmed. So many things. He was so sweet. And he threw it in his mouth. And this is what we did. We were so lucky, so fortunate. Prabhupada would give us the ability to offer things to him by saying prayers. Yes. Otherwise, what was the question? We could do anything. We couldn't offer anything to anyone. We couldn't even offer to Prabhupada, except by his special causeless mercy. Huh? He trained us up to do these things. And then his head pujari in New Dwarka, Shalavati, she was number one pujari in 1972, 1973, very first class devotee. And she was always trying to improve. Prabhupada didn't like sometimes our ideas of improvement in Krishna consciousness. Changing, he would say, you Westerners, always changing. Just do what I say, he said, don't change. He said, in the West, he said, that's your disease, you always want to change. So she would ask me sometimes about Prabhupada, and I would tell her how I cooked for him and bring him his lunch and then bring chapatis to him one at a time. So she came to me one day and she said, Shruta Kirti, she said, do you know what I'm doing? I said, no. And she was worshipping Rukmini Dwarkadish, New Dwarka. She said, well, I bring him their boga, make the offering. And then she says, I'm going back into the kitchen and I'm bringing them chapatis one at a time. And I said, you are? She said, yeah, just like you do for Prabhupada. And I said, oh, okay. So of course, that day I went to Prabhupada. I said, Prabhupada, I said, Shalavati, she's offering the deities one chapati at a time, just like I do with you. And Prabhupada just shook his head. He said, nonsense, he said. The rascal. He said, tell her. don't change anything. He said, why is she doing such nonsense? He said, you can't go in there into the deity room. He said, they're eating. How can you go back in when they're eating? He said, tell her it's nonsense. So we were always such nonsense. And Prabhupada would have to correct this. I would bring him the Maha Prasadam in New Dwarka. And they were making these sweets with carob powder, puffed, not even real puffed rice. They would get this puffed rice that was made in the store by Quaker Oats, puffed rice. And they would assemble these sweets with carob powder and peanut butter and puffed rice. And so I brought him this Maha. He said, what is this? I said, there's sweets that they're making here in, at the temple. He just, what is this nonsense, he said. He said, why are you always concocting? He said, you Westerners, always concocting. He said, I've shown you such wonderful sweets. He said, Rasgulla, Sandesh, Gulab Jamun. He said, why are you making such nonsense? And I'd have to go into the kitchen and tell them. Prabhupada said, don't do these things. Don't concoct anything. Just do what I've said. This is what Prabhupada dealt with. But he was so sweet. And then if they were to come in the room and say, Prabhupada, were you upset? Oh, no, I'm not upset. He would say, just make as I... But he wouldn't chastise sometimes, especially the ladies. Sometimes he would be more merciful. Prabhupada was so merciful to all of us. But the ladies, he would be so merciful. He didn't like to see them crying. And then to the children, he was even more merciful. Prabhupada would just let them do anything as they liked, you know, and he would just play with them. So he had so many levels of mercy he would give out. So,
just one last thing for myself about Prabhupada on sleeping and eating, actually. He told one devotee in Montreal, because I've been hearing many stories from different devotees, that devotee was woken up by Prabhupada late at night. Prabhupada was about to translate. And the devotee said, Prabhupada, I don't like to sleep so much. And Prabhupada said, yes, I don't either. He said, the goal of our movement is actually no sleeping and no eating. Because we don't tell people this, but this is our goal.
I just wanted to tell a little thing about George Harrison. When he first bought the manor, he would come round quite often and meet with Srila Prabhupada. When Srila Prabhupada wasn't there, he would still come. And I was thinking about Maharaj's lecture this morning about integrity and honesty and different things. And when he would come, the devotees would pay their dandavats to him and treat him like God. And he really, really felt very uncomfortable with this. And one day on the streets, the Sankirtan devotees were distributing books. And they said they were... Because George Harrison did a big benefit for Bangladesh and raised a lot of money. And the devotees would say they were collecting for Bangladesh, but they weren't. And they happened to... actually asked George Harrison's manager. They didn't realize it was him. And they, you know, they were lying to him. They asked for a donation for the Bangladesh. And actually George Harrison stopped coming to the manor for about 15 years. And myself and another devotee arranged a Prabhupada reunion. Was that the year you came? No, you came the next time. Okay. And as everybody knows, Shyamasundara and George Harrison were very, very close, best friends. And we tried everything to get George Harrison to come. We would send prasadam, people would call him who knew him. He was so upset. And we had this reunion, and Shyama Sundar hadn't been to the manor maybe in, I don't know, 20 years, 25 years. And he actually stayed at our house, and he called up George Harrison. George Harrison wasn't home at the time. When we got back that night, there was a message back from George Harrison on the answering machine. He was so thrilled to hear from Shyama Sundar. And he agreed to meet him that day. And he came to the manor. He drove up in a big Porsche. And I was actually stood there with Shyama Sundar. And he had his bead bag and he had his DVDs. And as soon as he got out, he embraced Shyama Sundar. And they went to Prabhupada's room and George led a kirtan. And it was a very special time. And actually, I think then they went back to George's house. And I met George Harrison's wife a bit later. And she said that George was never as, she'd never seen him so happy as now, being again being with those devotees. And I just wanted to mention that because of Maharaj's class this morning, you know, George Harrison actually just wanted to be treated like an ordinary devotee, you know, but because he had money and wealth and fame, you know, we were giving him all this worship, you know. And he came back only because of that friendship of Shyama Sundar. And I just want to say Shyama Sundar is a very, very special devotee.
Maharaj, we give us some mercy. I'll have to ask the devotees here then. I think they've... Let's see, you want me to speak a little more? Yes. Okay, yes. Oh, yes. So we're going to finish, at least I'm going to finish up my part talking here. Amekal and I were leaving to Delhi very early in the morning, a 4 a.m. flight. So we wanted to stay here especially today, even though there was a Rath Yatra festival going on in somewhere nearby. We thought it was best just to stay here and see everyone at the feast, because we just wanted to thank all of you for being so nice to us and for enlivening us to remain by Prabhupada's lotus feet and continue to take the dust, the molecules of dust from Prabhupada's lotus feet. So we're very eager to come here as soon as we can. And after being here, of course, we know why everyone speaks so highly about Chaupati Temple. And everyone is just very wonderful here, and just continue as you're doing, and it will just grow more and more, and you can infect the entire society with the love that you have for Krishna and for each other. It's an example that Srila Prabhupada set, and I hope that over the past week that maybe some of the things I said showed that a little bit. I certainly don't know anything about Prabhupada at all, except that things that he did help me become attached to him, a little bit attached, and want to stay close by. And you're in such good hands here with Radhanath Maharaj. You have nothing to fear. You can be fearless because he's very expert. So you just have to stay in his boat, right? The Chaupati boat. And he'll take all of you back to Godhead, and by his mercy, he's also trying to drag us back with him. So we appreciate, Maharaj, everything you've done and continue to do, because I know you're always there for us. And we both want to thank you from deep within our hearts. And Yadabar and Vishaka, the same goes to you as well. And it's not possible to give what you don't have. So the reflection of Maharaj is here. And also they've come for the same reason, and they also have that same love. You know, this is what Prabhupada has given his disciples. So it's here amongst all of them. So we just want to keep bathing in it as much as possible, and I know all of you do. So again, thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you, Shruti Kirti Prabhu, Amekala Prabhu, Vishaka Prabhu, Yaruvar Prabhu. Tonight, Shruti Kirti Prabhu, Amekala Prabhu are leaving for Delhi and then London. Srila Prabhupada has, in a very special way, come to our temple and blessed us with his divine grace through the historical narrations of Shruti Kirti Prabhu over the past week. Let us express our sincerest gratitude to them. Much louder, please. Much, much, much louder, please. Very, very much louder. One. Let us chant the holy names with the same enthusiasm, please.